Zandvoort said goodbye to two Orange Armies this weekend. One from Zandvoort and the other one at Lauwendijk. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. What a send-off for the Dutch Grand Prix when their home hero's race lasts less than a full lap. What can you do? Welcome to episode 680 of Motorsport 101. Glad you could join us. And this is going to be a Dutch Grand Prix episode. Good to be back. Got a nice little pair of double headers for you. And you may have noticed on your feeds, coming out a little bit earlier this week, which is great. We actually get to record these on a Monday. A little bit of insider info for you. We normally record these on a Wednesday and try and get them out as soon as we can because, hey, working full-time and schedules and all of that is always fun, but the way it all came together this week means we could record on a Monday, which I'm very grateful for, and we've got a couple of special guests. First up, making his return to the show for the first time in a month, the man's been battling a sinus infection, bless his heart, Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cam. How's it going?
Hi. everything, well, nothing smells bad anymore, but I'm definitely not 100%. We'll see how this recording goes. No, we are recording this on a Monday because I took some vacation time from work to go to the New Hampshire Motor Speedway event for NASCAR, in which it rained on and off for the entire fucking weekend. And I didn't end up going to any racing because while they did run the race, on Sunday, a bunch of it was in the wet because New Hampshire's flat enough where they can actually use rain tires. I don't know. Standing in the rain for 3 hours to get like an hour of dry running is not my idea of a good time.
Yeah, the fun is it worth it factor probably starts kicking in a little bit there. It's like, oh, I'm going to be standing in rain for hours at a time.
I'm sad because I missed out on a Josh Berry top three. Wood Brothers Common Success. I think that's their longest top 10 streak since 1994.
Wow.
With Morgan Shepherd.
Wow. Jeez. Almost as old as us on this show. You've always been the baby of the crowd between the four of us on here.
And yet I have the most knee problems.
you've got to take your trade-offs where you can get them. Also joining us, unfortunately, his American healthcare is a little bit better off at the moment, but making his long-awaited return to the show, well, since I didn't actually come on, is Mr. Ryan Eric King, everybody. Hello, Ryan. Good to see you again, mate.
I was lied to. I thought we were getting an Orange Army together. I didn't know it was that kind of orange.
Wrong continent, King.
You thought it was the Knicks.
I was ready to go.
For those who are not watching this on a visual medium, yes, this is smug New York Knicks fan with his smug New York championship shirt, but he's allowed to be.
Yeah, that's the privilege of winning. You get to be smug about this shit, and we've both been there in recent times ourselves.
No Larry?
I would say all of us have racked one up in the last, 6 years?
Yeah, 2020. In my case, yours is 23 was yours, Cam?
24.
There you go. I'm always bad with years. I'm always one out. But yeah, we've all suffering from partial success since the turn of the decade in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Yes, staring at what's left of Jason Tatum's leg, yes, this is success.
This is success. Look,
more success than what's going on with TWG and the Lakers, though, because that is a whole ass mess.
Yeah.
And yes, it is relevant here and in other podcasts that will be brought to you via the M101 Extended Family.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it will be, indeed. Bob Iger now owns the Lakers, and we've got a roster of exciting whites. I'm not sure how I feel about this. Apparently, our franchise is now worth $12 billion, which, good God.
let's just say Mark needed to get some stuff off the books quick, fast, and in a hurry.
My man sold a $12 billion sports franchise in a week. Like, that's the sort of money you wish you could turn around in that kind of pace. My goodness. It was a quick turnaround than Lando Norris's pole lap. All of that and more coming up in the next hour or so as we talk about the Dutch Grand Prix. McLaren, back-to-back wins. Lando Norris takes the Dutch Grand Prix, a very different shade of orange taking the victory in that one. And hey, is Lando Norris a fringe title contender? Could we be getting a 2025-esque comeback with Lando Norris instead of Max Verstappen? Who knows? We'll talk about it on the show. Team orders are back with a vengeance in the Mercedes and Ferrari camps over the course of the weekend. Controversy, fan bases at war, you name it, we'll talk about it. We had a surprise stand-in, too, actually, because Isaac Hadjar broke his hand last week, so he couldn't make the Dutch Grand Prix. Liam Lawson, welcome back to hell.
The second Red Bull seat takes its pound of flesh one way or another.
It does indeed. And Yuki Tsunoda was back for a cameo as well. Aston Martin, points, plural, with an S on the end.
They don't call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing. It's still shit, but it's good enough to get points.
Yep. It's Aston Martin back in the scorers table for again, and this time with a P9 for Fernando Alonso. So I'll talk about that. Cadillac's made some moves in the off-season that we annoyingly missed in our summer break special, because it was in that week between the time we recorded that and the actual Grand Prix, because Graham Loudon is gone at Cadillac and Marcin Budkowski has taken his place at Cadillac's team principal role. And we'll be saying goodbye to Zandvoort like Formula One did at the end of this race. Because as we know, this was the last Dutch Grand Prix as we know it. It is gone from the calendar altogether. They had to make room for Turkey and Portimao somehow. And the Dutch Grand Prix has been sacrificed for our sins. We'll talk about that.
Have fun hosting Formula E.
Yeah, nothing. I forgot Formula E's hosting that for Gen 4. That's going to be wild. Oh my god.
DaCosta and Wehrlein committing actual war crimes through turn 3. That is going to be, somewhere on the yield between TNT and Hiroshima.
Yeah, that's gonna be spicy as hell. We'll talk about all of that and much more in the next hour or so. So let's get right into it. We'll do the social media at the end of the show. Let's talk about the Dutch Grand Prix. So, amazingly, we started out with a few drag. We had a good portion of rain, about half an hour before the actual green flag time. Track was still a little bit damp in places as the green got going, and when we did get going, on the opening lap, Max Verstappen puts a wheel on the inside of the paint at Leyendijk, loses the front, veers off into the outside wall, big smash, about 150 miles an hour. Thankfully, Max was okay, and no further harm done. The only other real victim was Gabriel Bortoleto, who pulled off a full 360 in the middle of the turn, and somehow no one hit him. Miraculous.
Nico Hülkenberg should go play the lottery after that dodge.
Yeah, it looked like a scene from Driven, not gonna lie.
Yeah, it was giving big Days of Thunder kind of energy there. Because they played a slow-mo of the onboard, and I'm like, Hülkenberg misses him by maybe a foot through the smoke. It is crazy. Incredible onboard shot there. Incredible scenes. After the cleanup was finished, Kimi Antonelli took the lead off the standing restart we got ahead of Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. The race then turned into a 2-3 stop race with tyre wear stronger than expected, and the key moment of the race was Lando Norris stretching out his second stint to build up a 7-lap tyre delta. Stop me if you've heard that one before in the McLaren strategy department. Run long to build up a delta? Never. Norris made up a 6-second deficit in just 3 laps coming out of the pits, and with Kimi boxed in by Lewis Hamilton running long, Lando went around the outside of him at turn 1, Alex Jakes hit a fever pitch that only dogs could hear, and didn't look back after taking the lead, even with a late VSC, because Esteban Ocon's Haas had to be parked up and died. It forced most of the top 5 back into the pits for fresher rubber. But no one could touch Lando Norris in the end. He won by 11 seconds ahead of Antonelli, with George Russell's 3rd place saved by another late VSC due to debris when both Williams hit each other at turn 1 earlier in the lap. More on that later. It leaves Antonelli with a 59-point lead at the halfway mark of the season. Well, we think it's halfway. If we get the full slate of 24, it's halfway. We'll have to wait and see on that one. But he has a 59-point lead are over both George Russell and Lewis Hamilton. They're both now tied for second, but George Russell is ahead of Lewis Hamilton on count back, 2 wins to 1. With Lando's pair of wins, he's now 83 points off the championship lead. And I love that on Blue Sky, off the back of last year's pods, two people asked me, Dre, what's the required run rate for Lando Norris? And I'm like, ah.
throwback.
Yeah, I was like, here we go again. A fun throwback indeed. I mean, King, what did you make of that? Of that Dutch Grand Prix, and another really dominant win for Lando Norris. It may be a little bit flattering given that late VSC, but still Lando in the back half, very, very strong.
Yeah, it was definitely very flattering to Lando, but it shows that the McLaren does have form. And if they do keep their, you know, foot to the floor, they could chase down Mercedes. And definitely shows that Mercedes needs to get their house in order fast. Do they have anything left in the tank in this car to try to develop a little bit more, try to not pull away from the field, but at least make sure that they have enough of an advantage that they don't lose their entire lead before the season's over.
Indeed. I mean, Cam, what did you make of it all out there?
Hugely concerned for Mercedes still. And the reason being, one, I think Toto Wolff is a liar, first and foremost.
To be fair, it's not the first time someone's made that accusation about him over the years.
Him when he lies on the internet. McLaren have brought, like, part two of their major upgrade package, what I would refer to as the Lay's Wavy rear wing end plates. They're very intricate. They're very nice. But
you could say that they're ribbed for her pleasure.
Will you go to hell? Please and thank you.
I'm not going to lie. I was thinking that. I just wasn't going to say it.
No. Leave it to King to throw his, like, occasional hand grenade in the chat.
This is what he does. Like, this is a man who knows he's comfortable here. He just throws that out there 15 minutes after coming back on.
I'm sending you to Alpine's team management.
Yeah, let's keep going. You gotta wait 15 minutes. You can't just come out the gates like that. You gotta ease in.
Just
going.
That's when you apply the condom after the foreplay.
But back on track. The two degenerates next to me. I will call her after this episode's over. The Mercedes has brought no major developments really since Canada, and yet they were 2-3 on the road, and that 2-3 is probably less safe than it could have been given how the VSC played out at the end. So I'm not hugely concerned, as long as they do have more upgrades in the pipeline, and by all accounts they do. It's just that we haven't seen them yet. But it has been constant updates for pretty much the other three of the four major teams, and Mercedes have very much just been coasting, and they are still racking up podiums, and Antonelli still pulled major points on everyone directly in his vicinity for the title.
Except George, he broke even with George, because, do you remember George? We forgot that George won the sprint. That just happened on the Saturday. Yeah,
it's also George Russell in the big 26, and when it comes time for our floppy award later this year, I have a difficult time thinking of a more worthy recipient on current form.
I've got a long way to go this season. I've got a bigger one. Don't worry about that. Oscar Piastri, but more on that later.
Oh, he's more on him later. Yeah. So yeah, another great win for McLaren. This place also does flatter the McLaren a bit. They do run shorter gears than everyone else up at the front of the field. There's nowhere for top speed at Zandvoort to really punish you there, only really to get benefit. And their car loves high-speed turns. And in the middle sector, their car was whooping ass this weekend.
Yeah, I saw some of the telemetry breaking it down. Like, they were, compared to the factory team, they are like 4 tenths quicker in the middle sector. But they're losing time on the faster elements of sectors 1 and 3. That's how it ended up balancing out, where it ended up being
McLaren are as busted good in high speed turns as they are bad in low speed turns, and it all kind of evens out at the end of the lap. So we probably need a bigger sample size. We've got Monza coming up. I would expect that to be kind of one sided, isn't it? Straight out of Space Jam. and then we'll see. But
yeah.
The other point that I will make about McLaren, they do have a better chance of running it down this year, because they only have one driver to actually care about and no papaya rules to worry about, because Oscar Piastri is getting bombed from a great height.
Oscar was 32 seconds behind Lando over the line, and Andrea Stella straight up said after the race was over, it was the second hard tire stint that did the damage, apparently. Not the first one when the tires he put on for the restart after the lap one red flag. It was the second step that he put on, according to Stella. Just couldn't get those tires in the window. Very, very low grip. And we've said it about Piastri for a couple of years now. He struggles in low grip scenarios, and this was another classic example of that.
Not the only one who dealt with that, though, because remember Antonelli's second hard stint, he could not get the tires going. So I wonder if that was more widespread than we thought.
Maybe so. I mean, again, Zandvoort a little bit colder than it normally is as well. There was only about, I think, 18, 19 degrees in the air. We were expecting like high 20s, given it's been a bit of a heat wave in Europe over the summer. You may have noticed or read in the news. It's been very hot lately, and it looks like we've finally got through the worst of it, because I'm actually wearing shorts. It's a plus, let me tell you. But 83 points, King, between Norris and Antonelli at the front of the field. Antonelli's looked a little bit more vulnerable the last two or three weekends. Lando's won the last two. Do you think there's a comeback on here, or do you think this is more of a case of, hey, we're going to cash in on this little blip? Because it is Monza next, after all, and, well, that's never been the happiest of McLaren hunting grounds.
McLaren won't do well in Monza. Mercedes still has more than a race win in hand. The McLaren are safely at arm's length. It's not something to be concerned about yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you look at the back half of the calendar, right? There's not a lot of tracks left that are like Zandvoort directly. I think Singapore is probably the one that sticks out to me most. Maybe even Brazil. Then, yeah.
I would say the low speed turns the Mercedes is tremendous through. I would probably say that'll help them in Singapore. I think the big thing for McLaren is that versus Mercedes. Mercedes seem to always be they're at worst the second best team on a given weekend.
Yeah.
McLaren sometimes are fourth. Sometimes it's Ferrari fourth. Sometimes, often right now, it's Red Bull fourth. And they're all kind of trading weekend to weekend. And even when Mercedes are off the boil, as long as the cars finish, because that was a concern first half of the year, they're always still on the podium. They're minimizing the bad days, even if there are more bad days in there.
Yeah, I don't know if Toto was being sincere when he mentioned post-race that, hey, we might not have the money to have an upgrade path for the back half of the year. But he did say something that I think he was being sincere about, is that I think he would have felt a hell of a lot better about this if they didn't leave and by his own words, 50 to 100 points on the table that they left out via reliability in the first half of the season. We'd be talking championship over if they have another 75 points to play with right now.
We would have said the same thing last year had they not been double DSQ'd in Las Vegas and Lando had the oil leak in Zandvoort. It's those mistakes that open the door for Max to get back in, but also you look at the heater Max went on last year, he pretty much won every race from Monza forward, and when he wasn't winning, he was still second or third.
Six race wins in the last 10 with every race he was on the podium. Yeah, it was just relentless pressure, essentially, and yeah, it led to that thrilling finale and him coming up just 2 points short in the end. I don't think it's going to be that yet. Again, I'm curious to see what McLaren can salvage in Monza. Again, that's going to be a damage control sort of round.
It's going to be that race where Ferrari turns the engines up to blowing point so they can have a good showing in front of the home fans. The yearly occurrence.
We've been here before. I remember it was like the last round before Max's 10th win in a row, and then Ferrari really gave it both barrels to try and win that home. Ricardo Sainz and Charles Leclerc, and they threw the house at him.
And then Red Bull won at Monza with medium downforce on, because the 2023 Red Bull was something we won't see again for a little bit.
Yeah, that would be very, very interesting indeed. Again, I'm looking forward to seeing what the damage control is on that one. The other interesting headlines, and these fan bases are still beefing about this on social media as we record this on Monday night. Team orders back with a vengeance. It's like the Premier League's return. We're back on the menu. There was two major incidents of this. We had Lewis Hamilton be very vocal on the radio, because we all know a good Lewis radio message is always going to get broadcast. And of course, Mercedes as well, with Russell and Antonelli. They asked Russell, who didn't stop during that final VSC, do you mind stepping aside for Kimi, who was trying to chase down Lando Norris at the end, very much unsuccessfully. And George actually obliged, which I must say surprised me. I didn't think George was actually going to be so keen to do that. He was not happy about it, but apparently he seemed to have had a bit of a U-turn on his thinking about it after the race was over. I mean, Keith, did you think George was going to, shall we say, step aside for Kimi when there's still an active 60-point title battle on right now? And what did you make of it?
Yes, but like, it's him being fully aware that this title fight isn't over, and should it reach crunch time, I'm expecting the same thing back.
That's exactly what my logic was when this was happening. My thought was, I wonder if that's George trying to build up some goodwill for the future down the road in case the roles are reversed. He may need a favor. He might be on the favorable strategy. As Max in our chat says, Cam, always good to have an IOU in the pocket.
I think it's a little too early to burn this Mercedes garage down. And I think George probably holds that as well. It also might be a little bit of an acknowledgement from both Mercedes and George that it might be a bridge too far. I mean, he's two race wins behind Kimi at this point. He is an ocean away. And the thing is, Kimi's not falling off. He's still ticking the boxes. Even if he didn't win this weekend, it was still a hell of a drive. He still held Lando off probably longer than he could or maybe should have for his own race. In that tire delted stint where Lando just gobbled him up. I expect there will be some sort of IOU later in the year, and one would hope, if it comes down to brass tacks, that Antonelli obliges. Because that really would then burn down this Mercedes garage. Like the good old days from 10 years ago.
A fine vintage when Toto Wolff pretended to fire both his drivers off the Catalunya 2016.
It was not pretend. It happened.
Read that. I was like,
if Nico didn't retire, one of them was gone from that team.
If Dr. Z himself did not get involved, yeah, they would have had to find two new drivers.
Yeah, I was like, with Toto, you've always got to take a little bit of a pinch of salt. I was told back then in 2016 from a good friend of someone inside Mercedes that, no, like, Dre, Toto was going to fire both of those dudes. And I was like, really? And you know, I always kind of like pinch of salted that in the back of the head. And then I think it was around a couple of months ago at Catalunya, 10 years on, where Toto admitted, no, I actually fired the pair of them. I kind of came round on it because no party was predominantly to blame. He was like, well, we just got to kind of bring them back and just, you know, say, don't do that again. Otherwise, we really will fire you.
He fired him so hard, he gave Nico Rosberg a contract extension later in the year. Still one of the funnier videos that's still up on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Look, if nothing else, Nico Rosberg has got no problem burning shit down whenever he's on Sky Sports F1. He will ask the awkward question. More accountable than 90% of motorsports journalists out there. Nico Rosberg, who has got nothing to lose, he's just going to burn it down. I kind of think it's funny. Speaking of burning it down, yeah, I mean, the Ferrari one's probably a bit more high profile given, well, it's a Lewis Hamilton subject, and we all know that a Lewis Hamilton subject increases the vitriol by 2, maybe 3 on a good day. It was a weird one, Cam, because it was like, there was clear strategy divergence here from the Ferraris. Hamilton, they were kind of caught a little bit in no man's land with a couple of times. They tried running him longer on a couple of his stints, you know, maybe thinking about track position, maybe thinking about a run to the end before that last VSC effectively gave him a free stop. But there were obviously moments where they were converging. Charles refused the team order to box at one point. Lewis got very vocal on the radio. I mean, what did you make of it all as it was happening?
You know, I've maintained up to this point that I think Ferrari's actually executing this year pretty well. I just think they're up against the hard ceiling of what their car can do. This is not one of those times. Because the thing is for me is that it's not even... the product of Lewis catching Charles in that stint was that he, similar to Lando, went on a tire offset. So they ran him longer, boxed him, he was on fresher tires. Tire wear was much more intense because of how green the track was. All the rubber got washed away than I think people realized going into this race. And what I don't get, just tell Charles to move aside, because by boxing him, they put him on kind of a worst of all world strategy that ended up kind of curtailing any shot he had of getting higher in the race. While at the same time, he refused this, understanding this, and then hurt Lewis's race in the process as well. Just tell him to get out of the way, rather than boxing him.
It seems that Ferrari are reluctant. It's like they're almost... call me out if I'm wrong on this, King. It feels like Ferrari are almost trying to remove the scars of old, where it's like they've had such blatant 1-2 policies in the past. They've had big blow-ups about team orders before in years past. And it's like, it's almost like now in this Hamilton era, because we saw this at Miami last year as well, it's almost like they're reluctant to tell a driver to step aside. It's like they'll sit there for a few laps and they'll think about it, maybe order an espresso, reconvene at lunch, and then maybe
I'm gonna
they'll
cut you off here.
Yeah, go.
Remember Germany 2018 when they did exactly this and they wouldn't get Raikkonen out of the way?
Oh, yeah.
Remember, what was it, China 2019, when they wouldn't get Charles out of the way, and then they wouldn't get Seb out of the way when they offset the tires the other way? This is not new.
Yeah.
I'd say what makes this case different is that, besides what's actually happening out on track, for the sake of what I'd like to call garage civility, they have to treat both Leclerc and Hamilton like equals, because we've seen both Leclerc and Hamilton lash out at moments of their career when they felt like they were getting the short end of the stick, and Ferrari do not want to be in that position.
Lest we forget that Italian Grand Prix in 2023 when Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc almost killed each other like 6 times.
Yeah.
That was a race of aggression. That was
what you think?
Yeah, to say the least. That was beef. That was more beef than the NASCAR prize giving ceremony. I mean, that was crazy.
That was lobster this weekend.
Oh yeah. Ryan Blaney likes his lobster. Damn it, Bubba. Anyway, yeah, it was. I don't know, man. It's just. It gets to my overriding feeling. Look, I'm a Ferrari man. I make no bones about this. If people who know me on this show for a long time,
you're a Ferrari fan?
I know this is startling new revelations to people that are listening. Hey, man, every show is someone's first.
I remember Adam Johnson bringing up a deck chair and then watching the conflagration about 50 miles west.
Fair. It was Tchaikovsky's 1812 overture with the amount of cannons that I was giving out back then.
Tchaikovsky, yeah, always, yes.
Mm-hmm. All 21 of them. But it was... It's just the overriding sentiment that we're just not ready to win championships yet. It's just the overriding sensation coming out of this weekend. It just feels like...
There needs to be a degree of just ripping the fucking bandage off at Ferrari that I don't feel like they are able or willing to do.
Where's the leadership? like, this is my overall question here, because, like, and don't get me wrong, everybody loves Fred Vasser. Like, he's one of the nicest, funniest, entertaining dudes we have in F1. He doesn't take himself too seriously. Yeah, we all love him for that reason. I do. I've got no, I like, I, as a, on a personal basis, I think he's great. But when it comes to the clutch moments, when it comes to winning time, as Pat Riley would say, this was a sloppy weekend. And, you know, there was already the talk in qualifying that they were messing with the deployment of their power unit in between Q2 and Q3, and that allegedly cost Charles time, didn't work. And this is Zandvoort, a track position race, where track position is everything at Zandvoort. So starting a race from row three is not... You're automatically, effectively ruling yourself out of the win. And I think this was a winnable race for Ferrari this weekend. If they start from the front row, I think they've genuinely got the pace to think about a win. I mean, we saw it in the sprints. Like, Charles was good enough on his soft tires to run up against Lando on the medium. And I thought, ooh, okay, we're cooking a little bit here. And then in the race... just sloppy management gets in the way again. They're compromising both their drivers' strategies. And in the end, because of the timing of that second VSC at the end, what I thought was a winnable race, they end up fourth and fifth. And I can't help but feel disappointed at the end of that, because it's like we're dropping the ball with opportunities here. Look, I don't think Ferrari's going to win the championship or anything like that. I still think it's Mercedes to lose right now, of course. But it just feels like we're being flattered sitting second in the constructors right now because of the fact that Mercedes have failed to execute this year on a few weekends. So, like, you know.
I think Ferrari are throwing some stuff at a wall and seeing what sticks, because there is nothing left. Like, I think they're getting anything and everything there is to get out of the car, which most years is not Ferrari's problem.
Mm.
I just don't think there is anything more to get out of this car, because we go to, like, those last two weekends. You would expect Ferrari to be really strong at a rear degradation focused, really chassis forward track.
Yeah.
In qualifying for the sprint, they were like fourth best. And then they got a little better, and they got ahead of Red Bull, and McLaren leapfrogged everyone with the changes out of park for May. And Mercedes are just this immutable force that even when they're not winning, they're still racking up the big points, and they are just consistently drilling points out of Ferrari when the car doesn't break down.
Just feels like we're not quite there. And that, like, this is like a really frustrating place to be, because Ferrari have been the second best team in Formula One the first half of this season, definitely, in my opinion. They were good enough where they, you know, they've won a couple of races, they've taken advantage of Mercedes errors, you know, a couple of times, and they've been opportunistic, and that's nice. It's like that 2015 spot where Seb first rolled up. It's like, ooh, a couple of wins here. That's nice, you know.
It's like the 2019 kind of. Remember when Mercedes just bulldozed everyone so hard in 2019 that there was never any championship hope? But in the middle of that season, they lost a bunch of races to Ferrari and to Red Bull, and you think,
yeah,
they're kind of falling off. And then their Japan upgrade happened, and they ran the field over for the remainder of the year. Other than Brazil.
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah,
That's kind of what I'm expecting to happen this year.
It's just frustrating, because, like, first of all, being in second place is the worst place you want to be, because then you start thinking about wins, and you start thinking about, hey, can we get some opportunities to maybe win if Mercedes has a bad day, if there's a reliability concern, if there's setup issues, you know, you name it. You want to be there to strike and take advantage, and we're not doing that right now. And now McLaren's starting to bulldoze their way into play a little bit more now the last two or three weekends, because what do we always say about McLaren? Brilliant in-season development. They get it, and then once they figure their concepts out, they get good very quickly. And I think it's happening again this year. They're still going to be behind when it comes to things like engine deployment, because they're the customer there, but the rest of their car is good. It's clearly good enough where it can win on a good day now. And, you know, that's a problem, because I can't say that about Ferrari right now.
No, the tracks where you'd expect them to be devastatingly quick, like Monaco, like Hungary, Mercedes absolutely dominated them. And in Hungary, Mercedes were not best. And it's not like Ferrari aren't bringing development. They brought a major floor upgrade here, and they were kind of static with where they have been.
Yeah, jury's still out on that one, I think. Yeah, incomplete sample size. But yeah, Ferrari, a little bit lost at sea at the moment. They're kind of in no man's land. Not quite good enough to challenge for wins. And now they've got McLaren to worry about behind them as well. Speaking of things that were behind them, yeah, Red Bull had quite a tumultuous weekend. Max, his race lasted 3 miles. What's Liam Lawson doing here? Yeah, it turns out, for those of you who didn't read the story initially, Isaac Hadjar does boxing as part of his training regimen. He boxed all right. Yeah, apparently he does it. It's part of his routine. 2 or 3 times a week he's in the gym. And last week, he hit a speed bag a bit too hard and had a hairline fracture in his hand, which is rough, broken hand. Basically, Red Bull told Craig Slater on Sky Sports F1 on the Friday that out of an abundance of caution, they had to tell Hadjar to park him for a race weekend. I love the chat's got jokes going, taking box to a whole new level. That's a different meaning of box this lap. If I had a nickel for every time Liam Lawson covered for someone with a broken hand,
you would have 2 nickels.
Which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it's happened twice. And
at Zandvoort, let's say.
At Zandvoort, too. Amazing. Like, Liam Lawson's been in F1 for 4 seasons now, and 3 of them he's had to replace a driver through injury. 2 of them at Zandvoort. Shit's wild. But Lawson came in for the weekend. Yuki Tsunoda then had to take his old seat at Racing Bulls for the weekend. And King, what did you make of their weekends? I actually think they both did pretty good, all things considered.
Yeah, all things considered, with less than a week's notice. Couldn't really ask for much more. Especially if you're, say, Liam Lawson, and you're coming into the team with the baggage that you had after the first time you were there.
I say we had kind of like double baggage here with Liam exiting the team the way he did last year, and Yuki having not driven one of these cars yet.
Yeah, there was a lot of debate about this on social media as to who, why is Yuki coming in over here? Why is Lawson going into the Red Bull seat? Why? I know my old mate at the race, Josh Schutzel, was like, why isn't Lindblad getting a go? He's been fast, you know. Is this not like a little bit of a teaser for what the future could be, given, you know, they've put a lot of stock into Lindblad over the last couple of years? I thought this was more than sensible. Liam Lawson's driven a car in race trim. Yuki Tsunoda hasn't. Yuki's your reserve. Plug him in. You know, this makes sense to where I'm sitting. What did you make of him, Cam, over the weekend?
They were both solid. Liam was actually pretty impressive in qualifying. Not that far off of Max. It'd be hard to say that Max was at his best this weekend, though, because that is one of the worst Max weekends I can remember in a hot minute. The vibe was off, and then he crashed through the bank turn. And it was, according to him, less the fact that about the white paint, and it's that he saw a dry patch, thought that he could use that to get some extra acceleration, and no, the rears went, and he just clubbed that wall a ton. It was like a NASCAR crash.
Yeah, he fully admitted that after the race. He was like, yeah, this one's on me. I thought it was dry, put my foot down, tried to take advantage of a situation. Misjudged it, got it wrong in the wall, day done. As Jason points out, third time in his career he's qualified P7 and then failed to finish. Because where do people get these stats from? Absolute crazy shit.
This is what this network specializes in.
Absolutely. My goodness. But
I thought Lawson drove really well. Got points on the board, which is a whole lot more than we could say for how Red Bull went for him last year. Yuki was very unlucky to not score points because of your tires cannot legally degrade without your consent Fernando Alonso stint, which jumped him up the midfield and into P9. Aston Martin have gained like 3 seconds in 2 weekends. By Singapore, they're going to be lapping the field.
wild that I think Fernando had the longest soft tire stint and the longest hard tire stint of that race. I think it was 32 laps on the soft, and I think 35 laps on the hard tire. The only guy I saw effectively do, I mean, I say effectively, it was a one-off, obviously, because you're allowed to change tires in the pits on a red flag. I mean, we had that early on. A lot of guys did change tires on lap one, but Alonso didn't. But effectively, yeah, he made the one stopper work, which I always thought was going to be the game plan. But as Cam alluded to, worse tire wear than expected because it was a relatively green track. But yeah, King, there's hope for Aston Martin at Team Silverstone. They're in the points. They're on a roll. Well,
don't address me about Aston Martin like they're my team now. No.
They're your team now.
Well,
For those who don't know, King's only a part-timer on the show now. Ryan King, for his sins, is a New York Jets fan. And their owner, Woody Johnson, now sits on the board of Aston Martin as a executive and part owner. They're your team now, King.
No. See, what, we are now going to find a way to have Adrian Newey tear his ACL.
Yeah, we're going to have Adrian Newey run out there with the American flag in his first race of the
first
season.
First
snap. Aaron Rodgers.
but... honest to God, on merit, no BS points for Aston Martin. Honda Spec 2 engine this weekend. It's still not that good, but it's better. And yeah, 3 seconds in 2 weekends. That is incredible in-season development. If only they weren't like 5 to 6 seconds a lap off at Spa.
It's like, it would be great development if we weren't starting from, like, -5 back over here. It's like, they started the Open in around in Australia from New Zealand. Like that's how bad
it was. How far back are you starting? Stoffel Van Dorn 2017.
55 place group penalty. Gotcha. The gain, as Raptor says in the chat, easy to gain time when you're so far back. Also, loving the chat from Kira. I mean, if we're talking King's connections, he has to be an Alpine fan. And I'm like,
Alpine, who had their major upgrade package on the car this weekend on one car with Pierre Gasly. Got a point, but it probably could have and should have been better. But Arvid Lindblad copped a penalty off of the first red flag for a yellow flag infringement.
Yeah,
and then spent the rest of the race as a rolling roadblock. Tried to get Yuki in the points. Delayed some cars, but not enough.
Team game. That youngster's learning something here. Get some goodwill in the bank. We love that. All of that. Yeah, I have to say, props to Aston Martin. That was, old man Alonso still got a bit of game in him because that
was.
He can
still drive.
He
can still drive when he's got a car that isn't a genuine worst car of the decade contender. Who could have thought? Not listed here, but I do want to shout it out. Nico Hülkenberg, remember that save? Well, it became important because he drove a sterling race
P8.
To get more points on the board up in P8. Audi are legit. Like, since their engine upgrade, they cleaned up some of the reliability. They are legit. They are now fighting the racing bulls at the top of the midfield.
Yeah, I can't deny it's very impressive. I mean, Hülkenberg was P8 on the day. That matches Audi's best result of the year. And they're now within 5 points of Haas. It looks like there's going to be a fight for seventh in the constructors. Because Haas have 21 points. Audi's got 16, Williams 11, Aston Martin now have 3, Cadillac still failing to score. King, did you think that within half a season of Audi being on the grid, they're now regularly in the points? Because this is now becoming a frequent occurrence.
Oh, man. It's sort of yes and no. So, I expected them to have the pace they do have. I didn't expect the other teams around them to be as bad as they are.
Yeah, dude, Haas have been cheeks since, round 5.
Yeah, Haas has been rough. They started strong, dropped off a cliff, Williams
Haas started
been...
this era ready, is what they started. They are McLaren in 2014. They came out of the gates pretty good. And the nanosecond that development came into play, they've dropped off a cliff.
It's giving Günther Steiner's tenure, where it was like, you know, where it's like, hey, we don't know how to develop a car in season properly. And he had, and that was Günther's probably biggest problem when he was running Haas on a shoestring budget. Not necessarily what they were. It was more the, well, how do you compete in season? And they were, he was very conservative of upgrade packages. Like, oh, we're going to have a big one later on in the year. Oh, the big package doesn't work. What do we do now?
And you've thrown away 3 or 4 months because they don't control their own development. They are beholden to Dallara, of course, and their friend, their sponsor, Toyota Gazoo, because they use their facilities now. But ultimately, they're not a team that controls their own fate as far as when things end up on the car.
I guess this is part of their philosophy they've always had of, hey, maximize what you can get off the shelf and then kind of go from there. And yeah, it's starting to show the problems now because they can't compete with the teams around them at this point. Audi's reeling them in. Williams are only maybe 1 or 2 weekends away from potentially overtaking them because, you know, like...
I don't know, Dre.
Although...
Depends if their new signings keep junking cars.
Yeah, I mean, the big news going into this weekend was that Williams have now basically confirmed their lineup for next year. Alex Albon has agreed for that final year of his contract for 2027, and Carlos Sainz is now on a new multi-year contract to take him at least into the next couple of years at Williams. There was murmurs he wanted out, but it looks like he signed a new deal. There's a lot of murmurs in the Spanish press that that deal is 30 million euros a year at Williams. King, I didn't know James Vowles had that kind of money in him because he's opened up the safe to keep Carlos Sainz on board as seemingly their number one driver because holy shit, that's a lot of bread.
I mean, who else are they going to get?
I mean, when you put it like that, I mean,
you know, I think we found the secret to James Vowles' his riz. It's actually just money.
Yeah, just yeah.
It's like that for a lot of people.
That's what I'm saying.
It's Floyd Mayweather just carrying around a bag of money at all times, just in case. It's like Mr. Monopoly out here. Just like, hey, shut up. Just take a stack and then crack on with your day. No, it's 30 million a year when you're sitting ninth in the Constructors' Championship is wild to me that you're on that kind of bread. Allegedly, Alonso is on that kind of money at Aston Martin, but we all know that Aston has had...
Aston's a factory team. They get their engines for free.
And they've got a big bankroll from Lawrence and the rest of Aston Martin. You know, like, Williams are a true independent, and I didn't, like, everything we've seen from Williams and the James Vowles tenure since they got there has been a lot about stretching the pennies while they try to basically revamp Grove into modernizing it.
Stretching the pennies while they are all saved up in the background for his... one hot date in a hotel.
Carlos, baby, sit down. we got these McLaren rear wings here for you. they're for your pleasure. Would you like to sign this new extension with Williams Racing? yeah. As Max puts out in the chat, that's about 50% more than Aprilia's entire MotoGP budget per year. Whew!
Kind of tells you the scale of the sports there now, don't it?
Yeah, just a smidge. So, of course, Alex Carter started celebrating that by driving into his teammate, as you know.
Yeah, that wasn't even close, man.
Yeah. You know it was bad, King, when they actually hit him with a 10-second time penalty for a hit on his own teammate. The sport never does that.
Hey, sometimes you gotta lay the law down.
My man's like, oh, okay, now that is so egregious. Okay, we got to dig in for this.
It didn't even DNF the cars. It was just that stupid.
Yeah, just they were limping around, then they spilled so much debris that they had to pull out a very late VSC to clean it up with basically 2 laps to go. in the race. So yeah, absolutely wild. To be fair, Science apologized on Twitter for it in the recent aftermath of this, and this one's on me. I locked up, made a mistake when I was trying to pass him, and yeah, it happens. But yeah, wild scenes on that one. A couple more bits to get to before we get out of here. Big one at Cadillac. In last week, it was announced that Graham Loudon was released from the Cadillac F1 team as team principal. I love that our recently in the news friend, Mr. Dan Towers, said it was, quote, a planned leadership transition. Sure. We all believe you.
Yeah, that was also then followed up with this was not a mutual decision, which immediately right. Then undermines that.
Right. I was like, they didn't even... Like, Dan had completely forgotten that initial statement by the time he sat down with the actual journos for that Zoom call he did with them, and it was like, oh, yeah, this wasn't mutual, and I'm like, well, there you go, Dan.
Hey, you don't know. Maybe he planned to screw Graham over the entire time.
Like, so, King, let me get this straight. Stage 4 of this plan where it says, hang on, and then we fire our team principal halfway through our first season.
Yeah. Is there a bit of French Racing Blue on that plan paper?
Just a thought. For those who don't
maybe
know...
Maybe not. Well, yeah, there is on the team principal.
Yeah, for those who missed the news, yeah, he's gone, and in his place is ex-Alpine executive director Marcin Budkowski. Remember him? That pub
he'll
quiz
fix
answer?
Everything.
like Poland mentioned, as our fellow Polish man Jason in the chat says. Yeah, Marcin Budkowski is now team principal over there. Last time we saw him in the paddock, outside of his Polish TV commitments, it was as Alpine's executive director, essentially. Yeah. What do you make of that one, Cam? Because it's like, this was, for me, it was certainly eyebrow-raising when the news first, I was like, really? Kind of like I've just sacked the dude halfway through a season? Like, what's going on here?
I'm not going to name the sauce, but they are someone with direct ties into one of the companies with the name above the name on the plaque above the door. Mm-hmm. And apparently this was felt like it was needed internally. Graham, he did something with nothing at Marussia, and that must be commended. But this is a very different team with very different ambitions, and I just wonder if the way the things were going within that team was incompatible with what Cadillac wants to be. Now, Cadillac wanted to be eighth in the Constructors this year via Dan Towers. That was never realistic.
I think that's part of the problem here. I think they already had very lofty expectations as a brand new team. I thought, I don't know if it's that classic American rambunctious attitude of, we're going to come in and we're going to be great straight away because we're General Motors and we've got all these assets and resources.
They're not even General Motors yet. They're not going to be for a couple years. It's just a sticker on TWG F1. And TWG is not in a good way right now.
No, there's absolutely not, if you've been reading the news lately. Big Boss over there is under a lot of investigations over where that money's coming from. Hence why he sold the Lakers last week for 12 billion schmeckles. So, yeah. I mean, King, what did you make of it? Because I know you're the American, and obviously these things are going to get a little bit of traction here and there as well. I mean, what did you make of it? Because I was shocked when Loudon was let go.
I was, I was shocked. I was like, maybe I thought they'd at least give him the season. Like,
right?
I didn't think he was gonna be here next year. But yeah, I thought they would give him the year before they'd fire him and replace him with someone more competent.
It's
that's kind of feels like how, given we've had suspension fires and brake failures, which is honestly an amazing yet accurate statement about Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they've had a couple of those too many.
Maybe. I was gonna say, like, it's, because I mean, it didn't help. I mean, if you may have seen the clip as well, going into the sprint on Saturday, they broke Perez's car by dropping it off the jacks. And it was just
it broke his straight line mode. Here's my thing with Caddy, right? All they had to be this year, and this should have been the aim going in, is just don't be trash. Don't be an atrocious last. Other than the reliability, they really haven't been. They've been in the fight. They've been in the fight really since their big upgrade package on the car. They can hang on to coattails of cars in front of them. That is a lot more than we can say for a lot of other teams in their first year in F1.
They're competitive. And that's like 80% of the battle. I remember they got praised in preseason testing in Bahrain for, quote, looking like a proper outfit by other teams when they were down there. Because I was like, hang on, first year, they look like a competent F1 team. Like, they were praised by their peers in the paddock during that test. I remember reading that on the race. I'll say this much about Graham Loudon, and I've said this many a time, one of the genuinely good people in the F1 paddock, and there's not many of them. I've always had a lot of admirance and a lot of time for Graham because he's very forthright, he's very honest. I saw, like, a day after the news dropped that he'd been let go, he had an interview already done with Planet F1, so credit to them. Basically saying, listen, like, I don't have a wide range of skills as a team principal. I'm good at getting something out of nothing and starting teams up off the ground. That's where he's strong is. But he openly admitted, I don't have the technical knowledge of some of where the other team principals are at in Formula One. And if you look around us on the paddock, we've talked about this before on the show, engineers being team principals has now spearheaded this sport. Like the direction now seems to be get an engineer at the front of the team because this is a complicated rule set. Ayo Komatsu at Haas, Lauren Mekies at Red Bull, Andrea Stella effectively at McLaren. Now we've got Marcin Budkowski at Cadillac, who has been an engineer for 25 years in the paddock. He debuted with Prost. Yeah.
Like, in 2001.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, it's slowly drifting into an NFL or a Premier League type of relationship where your team principal is effectively the manager or head coach, and you have an owner who's willing to, you know, drop the axe should the results not meet.
Yeah, very one bad year and you could be out, kind of. In the Prem nowadays, it's like a bad run of form can get you fired now in the Premier League, for example, let alone a bad season. If it's February or March and you've lost four or five in a row, you might lose your job. that's the way it goes now in the Premier League. In the NFL, we've seen a lot more 1/2 year firings now in that sport. And it's, I think F1, I agree with King, I think it's going the same way in Formula One now, where if you ain't got someone at the front of the helm who knows their shit about these cars, you might lose your gig very quickly. And like I said, Budkowski's been, he's got an engineering background. He was there in 01 with Prost. He was a huge reason why we have the halo on F1 cars. Now he was a huge part of that FIA working group to get the halo off the ground. You know, that's his expertise. He's a technical guy, and half the grid now has technical dudes in charge of their team. On a day-to-day basis. So, yeah, I think that's the way things are going right now. I mean, good luck to him. I think
that's exactly the kind of signing that Cadillac needs under their current structure. Until there is a General Motors engine in the back of that car, what format that is, we don't know yet because politics and such.
Mm-hmm.
They are TWG F1 with a Cadillac sticker on it.
Yeah.
This is setting you up for the next couple years, that when that engine does come in, the car side and the team side is set.
Yeah. They've got time. I would say there's no pressure, but
there's a lot of pressure.
According to Mr. Tauris, there apparently is, because they think Cadillac should be scoring points on a semi-regular basis already. And, well, they're not there yet.
No.
They had a shot. They had a long shot at one point in Monaco, and that's the nearest they've gotten. They haven't been anywhere near that since. They're not in that position yet. And I think some hard truths need to be talked about in that Cadillac organization right now to say, listen, we're not scoring right now. We need a car that can reliably get to the end of the race first. Then we can start thinking about maybe getting into the top 10 on a good day, if everything goes to plan, you know. So we'll see how we go. Before we go, this was the last race at Zandvoort. As mentioned before, this, like, the Zandvoort's promoters did not chase an extension to their current deal. I think they felt like the writing was on the wall for them when they found out that Portimao and Turkey are coming back in for 2027 on multi-year contracts. Zandvoort bowed out. They had the sprint as well. I think that might have been a little bit of a gift from Formula One. Here, have a sprint on the way out. You know, that'll help, right? But, I mean, King, what have you made? I mean, we've had six Dutch Grand Prix. They came back fully in 2021. What have you made of it on the calendar? Any memories to take away, or was it just a stinker from day one?
I mean, it was fine. Obviously, racing's not great. Track's pretty cool to lap, but like, yeah, sure. That's it.
Yeah, like 2021 was like the spectacle and the event of it, of all the Max fans going apeshit with the way he performed and then winning. I thought it raced okay in 22 and 23, but then most tracks raced okay in 22 and 23. 23 also had the berserk, insane rain that kept washing in and out. That was always going to help. 24, stunk. Last year, stunk. This year, the tire wear being really bad made it a better race than it probably should have been.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how I would say, as I agree with Karam, two great races out of six. That's 33%. That's still a better hit rate than some tracks we have on the calendar right now, believe it or not. It's a great spectacle. And I will always say this. The Dutch know how to party, if nothing else. They know how to put on a good show. It's a great atmosphere. You could see, I mean, there was 350,000 over the weekend at Zandvoort, so clearly over 100,000 on race day. Big turnout, big fans. And you're guaranteed to get a boatload of Dutch techno, because that's a guarantee.
Funny seeing them play the Max Verstappen song after he had written his car off.
Yeah. Genuine argument for some of the best fans in Formula One. They bring it, the Dutch. There's no such thing as a boring Dutch Grand Prix if you're in the stands, at least. That's worth something. And it's kind of wild that Max has effectively lost both his home rounds full-time in the last 2 years. We're all going to Austria. Agreed. Cool. Red Bull ringing this, essentially, for that's going to be now the new Max home round, essentially. But good track to race on.
Also still, of course, the Red Bull home round and the Max home round and the Max Red Bull home round. The most boring decision possible, he extended with Red Bull.
Oh, yeah. We've barely even mentioned it because we all kind of knew it was going to happen. Max is...
I think it's a funny yearly occurrence that is he going to leave? No, he's just staying with Red Bull.
Is he going to retire?
No. I think that was the other option. If he wasn't going to stay with Red Bull, he's going to go drive GT3s or some bullshit. But he's not going to Mercedes.
How is he
going
to pay to drive GT3s?
As I've said on this show earlier in the year, takes a man with bigger stones than I could ever imagine to walk away from $50 million a year at Red Bull to go drive some GTs instead. To have that kind of conviction against what F1 cars were, if he did that and genuinely retired to go drive some sports cars, chapeau to him, quite frankly. But no, he has signed the new extension. It's another 2 years on top of what he already had. Takes until the end of 2030. And the man said it himself. He wants to be a Red Bull for life. If he gets to the end of that contract, it would be the longest tenured driver with a single team in F1 history. It'll be 15 years with Red Bull racing if he gets to 2030, which would be...
one... You can go a little longer than that. Or he only got there middle of 16. Same family.
It would be like, one, that's crazy. Two, he'd only be 34 when that happens.
And there's another nugget for that. Who supplies Red Bull's engines, or at least the stickers on them?
Ford.
Who just debuted their new hypercar?
Ford.
Huh. Can't imagine that will have any bearing on his decision.
And what did Max say his dream race was? 24 Hours of Le Mans.
And that Ford sounds amazing, by the way.
Very nice engine noises. Very nice engine noises indeed. Right, that'll do it on this episode. We'll be back to cover the Freedom 250 in IndyCar, which is going to be a bright and cheery occasion between the three of us discussing that race. Definitely. Places you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you follow us on Blue Sky, you can. Mindful name, Dre Harrison, CBuckley917. I believe it's RyanEricKing.com is your handle now, King. You got the actual domain.
Yeah, I got the domain.
You fancy mother... Anyway, yeah, it's Dre Harrison and CBucket97 at bsky.social for the pair of us. Our website, motorsport101.com. If you also want to hear some written reviews of what we thought of this Grand Prix and the Freedom 250, sort of. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more next time out. And of course, if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. Raptor, Jason, Kira, Max, Jason, all in there as well. Thank you very much for watching and listening along. Much, much appreciated. As per, oh, forgot to mention the TikTok as well. TikTok and our Instagram for video highlights as well. Motorsport 101 pod for both of those if you want to see video highlights of the show and some extra stuff from yours truly. Right, I can put this off no longer. Freedom 250 coming up next. That'll be the next time out on Motorsport 101. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Ryan Eric King and Cameron Buckley. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara. See, this was the part where King awkwardly puts the buy in.
Oh,
that's what I'm waiting for. Like,
damn, I it's been so long.
We cleared the way for this, and this is what happens.